I think people assume that burnout is something that takes over time, but really I think some of our new docs just graduating out of residency and fellowship may be actually the most susceptible, because maybe they don't have the confidence, or they're just not in a position to set boundaries, right? Sure. No, I'm not going to work that Friday afternoon. I'm not going to come in that weekend. They either don't have the confidence, or they just simply can't.
Well, hey guys, I am really excited to welcome on Dr. Robert Oob, who is joining us. We kind of connected on Twitter, talking back and forth about burnout, and just to address the elephant in the room. Hey, this guy's not a teacher, but I think what we'll find out when we get into this conversation that I think every teacher knows that they're not alone, you know, and I'm sure that the medical professionals that have been in the trenches realize, hey, you know, there's other people going through this. So we kind of want to talk about what is it like, that burnout thing. But Robert, welcome. And I'm glad you could join us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, going through I'm 47 years old, and I had probably heard the term hospitalist. This is weird for the first time just a couple of years ago. So, that's your job title, particularly. Can you explain that just for anybody who may have gone way too long in life before knowing what that meant?
Sure, sure. And hopefully it's better if you don't know, that probably means you haven't been exposed to the hospital too much. So, I'm internal medicine trained. Most hospitalists are either probably family medicine or internal medicine trained. So we only take care of patients in the hospital. We don't have a clinic outside of the hospital. Typically, it's more of a kind of a shift work, if you will, kind of 7 days on, 7 days off kind of schedule. So the old fashioned way of medicine is that if you've had your primary care doctor, that's your doctor. If you get admitted to the hospital, that doctor would come and see you in the hospital. And long story short, that was not very good for the patient, not very good for the doctors or the nurses. So, the idea of a hospitalist was born, to where you have somebody just dedicated to the hospital, and seeing those patients.
Cool. So it's interesting. You know, we have students that go out maybe for long periods of time, and they would have like a liaison almost between the school. So you're kind of like, I don't know if I want to classify you as a classroom teacher or not, you know, because you kind of have these, patients coming and going. But that kind of brings me to that next thing, you said you'd kind of watched a couple of my podcasts thinking about students and patients. And what do you see with, like, from your end, some of the struggles, for those of you that are watching, listening, I kind of was drawn to some of the things that, that you said, simply because I thought, wow, the way that you look at patients is the way that I look at students. And so can you kind of just share with us maybe some of the struggles through the past couple of years, or maybe that have been building, in knowing that you're taking good care of patients?
Right, right. I think some of the parallels that I heard you mention, and I was surprised by in your podcast, I guess, is the it's just another student kind of phrase work. I think we can get in that trap too. Oh, it's just another patient, or worse, seeing patients just as a dollar sign, right? I think that's a dangerous trap you can fall into as well, and kind of some of the early signs of burnout. That's probably the biggest parallel that I saw initially, just from listening to some of your podcasts.
Yeah, cool. So do you see, where do you see burnout hitting different people? Because a lot like we do, in school you don't just have teachers, you have administrators, you have, like they say, the whole village across the board that students interact with. And it's the same in a hospital. Did you see burnout hit different, maybe, I don't know what, different groups of people differently?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think right now our nurses are getting slammed. I think the pandemic was really hard on them. They were in the rooms much more often than we were as doctors. We're maybe seeing these COVID patients once a day. They're in and out of the rooms all day. Their ratios. And then so the pandemic took out a lot of nurses. They're very uncomfortable with the work environment, maybe lack of personal protective equipment. A lot of them are moms. So all of a sudden now your kids can't go to school, so you're having to cut time back. And then now on the backside of the pandemic, we're seeing a huge nursing shortage. So their ratios. So that means, one nurse seeing 5, 6, 7 patients, obviously the higher that ratio, the worse it is for them. And so that's really affected them. As far as for the doctors go, you know, it affected us too. It obviously, seeing a lot of, I think just seeing a lot of death is not easy on people. You know, we see that obviously frequently in our job, but the COVID definitely picked it up a notch. And then, so, and again, increased loads for us. Like right now, my average, I'll see about 15 patients a day on COVID. It was not uncommon to have 20, 22, 23 patients a day. And those are patients that you're having to don and doff all the equipment. So it's just exhausting. And so thankfully that's all kind of calmed down, but we still kind of have all the background stuff that was present there before the pandemic and still there now.
So it's interesting, like from my perspective, we might look at this and say, hey, you know, like students go from one class, they leave in a middle school, high school setting. Another group comes in the beginning, we were sanitizing everything. So you guys are, you're popping a mask off, gloves off over and over and over and over and over throughout the day. And so it's interesting. I have a friend who's a nurse and it just reminded me of it, talking about how your ears, you know, if you're putting that mask behind your ears on and off, it's just this friction, man. I'm a science teacher. So like that can't be fun. So aside from that, like the care thing, I think just reading some of your tweets over the last year or so, you know, and I noticed this about you, which is kind of the draw, is like, there's a difference between complaints and awareness to make a situation better. And so where have you seen that, you know, maybe in the institutional world of medicine, of people saying, hey, and I don't know if you're familiar with, I think it's Albert Hirschman's Exit Voice and Loyalty, where he's like, some people just leave because they're like, I've had enough. And that's okay. Not vilifying anybody. Some people use their voice. And others are sticking it out. And so I'm just curious where you've maybe seen that a little bit in the medical world too.
Oh yeah. I was listening to your podcast earlier about cynicism and boy, you hit the nail on the head, you know, of people just kind of throwing up the white flag and saying, there's nothing I can do. You know, don't bother telling administration how it needs to change, because it's never going to change. And boy, that's exactly what you said. So you see that in some people. Maybe I'm just young and eager still. I'm 34 years old, so maybe I'm still on the earlier side of thinking maybe I can change this. And I've had this conversation with people on Twitter is you know, there's very little I can do with, you know, complaining about it. Sure, it might be a little bit therapeutic complaining with your buddies, but in and out of that moment, it's not going to really do too much. So, you know, you do what you can to maybe make these small changes over time, over a decade, right? If we can, you know, long-term horizon, if we can make a change, it's not great now. It's probably not going to change next year, but man, if we can make little changes over 10 years. And so, and that's part of my motivation of starting to post online. I've even kind of gotten into a little bit of kind of a part-time administrative job with my hospital. And so just trying to make those small steps to try to feel like I have some sense of control of these factors that affect us so much.
Sure. Now it's interesting you say that, because I should have asked this question from the get-go. So a hospitalist, you're not really in an administrative role. Not normally. No. Okay. Okay. So it's interesting, like trying to, you know, you can change a label, or the label for you might make sense, but for somebody else that's looking on from the outside. And I think that's interesting, is so you're kind of flirting that line between trying to be an ear to the ground because the patients matter and kicking that up the chain, but also, you know, having to be underneath that administrative leadership. So is that, do you find that that's challenging for people as well?
Absolutely. You know, most, I would probably say most doctors are probably under the umbrella of a hospital now. Certainly as hospitalists, most of us are. Some have private groups that they're contracted with, but most of us are employees of a hospital. So, you know, you have your motivations and things you want to do for care for patients, and the hospital has their metrics and motivations too, right? And sometimes those don't perfectly align, and I think that's where you start to get that friction, and burnout starts to occur. I oftentimes equate burnout and marriage a lot. And just like marriage is kind of death by a thousand cuts, or just that criticism that builds up over time, and it's just that animosity that builds up over time. I think you see the same kind of dynamic with burnout, and probably hospital administration and hospital systems too. And so it's definitely as a hospitalist, many physicians can sometimes feel like there's just a cog in the wheel, and I think that's a huge addition to burnout as well.
Yeah, I think we see that with teachers who feel like you come in and you like you have these dreams of all the great things you're going to do and how you're going to change the life of kids, but in the end, you find out that, man, they're not going to let me do all those things I want to do, or it doesn't really matter. So I hate to say that it's comforting to know somebody else is going through it. It's not misery loves company, right. but it's kind of like, okay, that's the nature of organizations. And I think what people don't always realize is that hospitals oftentimes are their businesses.
Yeah.
Right. So there is a running in the black that they need to go through. It's the same frustration we have sometimes with that insurance piece, right? In education, it's the same deal, but like government oversight and testing and then your local taxes, like those things just, they are what they are. And I think it's one of those things that I think sometimes it's just that mindset shift of, can we get people back focusing on why we're there, until the system starts to break down where you can't. So, I think that's good stuff. Did you see this? I don't know. I almost call it the burnout snowball effect, where you'd mentioned you started to lose nurses, and I don't know if it's simply the nature of debt to become a doctor and maybe why you didn't lose as many. Or maybe you did, and I just am not aware, but like once some people leave, the burden on those that have chosen to remain went up, and it's like, man, this is not sustainable. So that's something that's in the conversational works in hospitals as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, everybody's been affected from, and the problem is short staffing just affects everybody. Right. And then, but ultimately the saddest part is it affects patients. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think a staff in the hospital, we're short on it. Short on physical therapists, right? So at best, maybe if they're getting the patients three times a week to ambulate them, to walk them around, that's good. And so patients get weaker in the hospital, they end up needing to go to a skilled nursing facility or nursing home after, right? Well, who do we need to do that? Well, we need case managers and social workers to make those arrangements. Well, we're short staffed on them too, right? And so, and then when you're short staffed, those people are working harder. They're getting paid the same, if not less. So absolutely, snowball is a good way. Yeah. And then those case managers may say, okay, we're overwhelmed. Hey, doctors, y'all need to start doing more of this. And we're saying, no, we're overwhelmed already. And it's and then you start creating these bad dynamics in the hospital.
And I could see that too. It's like there's this really weird thing that when you finally say that I'm establishing a boundary now, because if I don't, it's going to affect my health and my family. Those two are really important, so I often combine them, felt. But but then you're like, well, but what about the patients? And in schools, it's like this. Well, it's about the kids. Totally get that. It is about the kids. But if I'm not healthy, what are the kids getting? And it's the same with patients. So that's kind of a shame. And, for us in education, we think, what is going to be done to ease this? And then what's the lag? So here in New York, it's a minimum 4 years and then a master's to stay on. And if somebody comes in 4 years, bright eyed, bushy tailed out of college at 22, 23 years old, and then they get burned out, they're going to drop the extra coin to get that master's degree within 5 years, or, they're just not. I wonder if, you're probably seeing those same things across the board.
Man, there's so many things I can say to that. So your last point about the new guys, I think that's an interesting perspective as well. And I've commented on that on Twitter as well, is that I think people assume that burnout is something that takes time. But really, I think some of our new docs just graduating out of residency and fellowship may be actually the most susceptible, because they get into the real world and all of a sudden they're hit with all these administrative pressures that they're not used to. They're usually the low man on the totem pole, right? So they don't have control over their schedule, right? They're being told you're going to work holidays, you're going to work weekends, right? And number three, they don't have maybe they don't have the confidence, or they're just not in a position to set boundaries, sure. Right? No, I'm not going to work that Friday afternoon. I'm not going to come in that weekend. They either don't have the confidence or they just simply can't. So I 100% agree with you about the early kind of career people, and that really worries me. Because how you see burnout in physicians, I think, is multiple ways. I think early retirement for the older guys, certainly. Mm-hmm. And then people just transitioning out of medicine. Mm-hmm. Some people just go to non-clinical work. There's entire societies dedicated to training physicians on non-clinical work. Or God forbid, suicide, which is absolutely a problem amongst physicians. Wow. So, you had said some comment like that made me think about kind of hopelessness, and that's where I think one of those key signs of burnout as well, is that you just, when you lose hope, we kind of referenced it earlier. Oh, I can't change the system. I'm done. That hopelessness is that you just, you know, I can't change the system. There's no hope for bettering my current situation, my job. It's always going to be overwhelming. Or I'm just not making a difference in my patients' lives.
Right.
That's kind of some of the common conversations I hear amongst friends and colleagues.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the thing for me in this, starting this journey, which started for me right in the midst of COVID, like overweight, mm-hmm. had a baby, like all these stresses, you know, kind of, well, I didn't have the baby. I can't take credit for that part, but you know, that started the ball. But then as you mm-hmm. get into this more, you're like, wow, you know, some people it is years, but I mm-hmm. forget the book I'm listening to talk about residency, 120 hours a week. Mm-hmm. You know, you're mm-hmm. talking 24s and high stress and mm-hmm. and then the fear that in the midst of that, your care drops. But yet, because you're young, you're inexperienced, you're not empowered. Like this is just a couple of days ago. I thought, what a perfect storm to tell somebody, yeah, this isn't mm-hmm. for me, you know, or to have them continue on because they racked up X amount of debt and this is really the only way out. So it's not good, you know, but yet what do? You can't tell people hold off on getting sick for a couple more years, because that will help us, mm-hmm. you know, stem the tide. But,
right.
Yeah. I don't know the solution either.
Yeah. And another point, that you made me kind of think of there as well as especially for, again, the years of training that we go through, right? I went through the path of being a doctor as fast as possible. 4 years of college, went straight into med school, 3 years of residency. That's as quick as you can do it. And I started practicing at 30 years old. I recently learned about something that you may have heard of, but something called arrival fallacy, where essentially you expect to be happier on the, you know, after getting a certain thing, and you get there and you're not. Naval, I think Ravikant, I think is how you say his name. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's kind of a philosopher. No. He's an angel investor, but kind of a philosopher as well. He puts it as, I have it written down. I'm looking through my notes. Desire is a contract you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get a thing. He said, but then you get that thing and you revert to your previous state. And I think that's just hits the nail on the head of these, the residents and fellows who finally graduate and they get there and they're like, oh boy, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Right.
So again, that's kind of going to the point where I think some of these early graduates, and probably the same thing for teachers, after you go through schooling and a master's or what have you, you get there and you're like, this is not what I thought it would be. And that hits hard.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it, because I just had read Ashley Stahl's book U-Turn, which is, you know, she worked in counterterrorism at like 22 years old in the CIA, and then she left, and she's like a career coach now. But she said something about goals, like about goals are the the happiness that we think we'll get when we achieve a thing or something along those same lines, that then you get there and you're like, oh, I was pushing for that, you know, which is really kind of got me thinking in the sense of how do we help people in any profession, I don't care what it is, to reconnect maybe to the core of who you are and that why, like why do you do what you do? And then if you really understand that, then you can hopefully the best you can set those boundaries for your physical, mental, emotional, you know, spiritual self. I forget the name of the book. I should pull that up now. I feel like it's very serendipitous. The Power of Full Engagement. That's the name of the book. And they talk about that, like, man, your values, when you're aligned with your values, you can put up with quite a bit. If you're familiar with Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, he survived Auschwitz, and you know, like, and he talked about how others beside him died, but he survived, and why that was. But you know, that when you're aligned with your values and you understand why you do something, and that's honored. Now, I keep using the word like validated or violated. And when our values, when we can validate our values, we can put up with almost anything. But when they're violated over time, then our morale drops, and we actually see our energy drops, our emotional ability to sponge and absorb and give back drops. And that's burnout right there. And how you got there doesn't really matter, as long as you can recognize it and then be like, whoa, I don't want to hurt myself, and I don't want to hurt anybody else. I got to figure this out. So, and I'm assuming you see those same things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. I love what you're saying about the why. One thing I recently posted is an identity of medicine, an identity outside of medicine gives you freedom within medicine. Because I think, you know, from a very early age and still, you know, I'm a doctor. That's part of my identity, of course, but it's not my top identity, right? I'm a father and I'm a father and a husband first. I think, yeah, finding that why and realigning with that, because boy, you will just get destroyed if your identity is just sank into medicine. Somebody actually commented on that post and put it perfectly. They said, you're replaceable in your work. You're not replaceable at home.
Yeah.
And so why I started posting on burnout too, is that, again, I was like 2 or 3 years out of residency and I was really struggling with a lot of burnout, you know, a lot of, again, that administrative pressures, some, patient mistreatment, you know, unappreciation and stuff like that. So that's really what kind of turned me on to it. I was like, whoa, I'm 2 years into this. This isn't supposed to be happening. Right. So that's really kind of what turned me on to the topic and really started getting me thinking about it. Had a little health scare as well. That kind of helped reshape the brain a little bit. So I thought I had a brain tumor for about 2 days. So I got an MRI, and that'll just profoundly shape my thinking on things.
I don't know how this is for you looking back, having it, you know, come back negative. And even if it came back positive, I would say there's a part of you that probably says it was a blessing, because it's that wake up. Like I was home. I've told this a bunch. Like I was home maybe a month, and I was 236 pounds. Just joking around with my parents, pulled up the arm cuff, and I went 175 over 101 on my blood pressure, sitting on a couch in the morning.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm gonna take that again. and I shot two for three on an average, you know what I mean? And I was like, whoa. So I went and it was like, okay, I got some things going on that I can, this is systemic, man. Like I know how I got here. and I bet now I've got a very important why about moving forward. And so it's good stuff. So if, you know, we connected on Twitter, if there's somebody who wants to connect with you on Twitter or anywhere else, how can they do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Main way to find me is on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Dr. _ Oob. So that's Dr. _. It's spelled like Oubre. So OUB as in boy, RE. So yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Robert, thanks so much. I mean, in your journey, if there's one last thing I could ask you to share, is there like a book or a quote or something that's been, you know, kind of a handle for life for you over the last couple of years that you might, you know, could encourage somebody else?
Oh, that's a good one. Man, yeah, some of the ones I already mentioned are good. I'm sure I'm going to, I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for you right now. I mean, I guess getting out of the burnout realm, to me, one of the things I've always lived by is the golden rule of treat others as you would have them treat you. So yeah. I think the world would be a whole heck of a lot better place, including Twitter, would be a whole lot better place if we live by that. So I guess that's what I'll leave you with.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us, and all absolutely. The class kickers out there, get out there, man, and kick some class, connect with Dr. Robert here. And again, thanks. We'll catch you guys next time.